As we keep getting reminded, this is a year of elections in many countries. Russia's, of course, has just finished. The USA and our own are to follow in the autumn. And it might be fair to say that most of the candidates are committed to a populist agenda designed simply, in some cases, to get them elected or to keep them in power, but devoid of any real principles. However, I have a feeling that thinking people are beginning to wise up to this and to discern the difference between content and substance. An example would be the huge number who defied the Kremlin and came to place flowers on Alex Navalny's grave or poured paint into the ballot boxes in protest against what was obviously a rigged election. It was a demonstration by ordinary folk of what they really want. And in some ways, that was what was happening on Palm Sunday, when the ordinary folk welcomed Jesus into Jerusalem, strewing palms before him and shouting, as we heard, Hosannas to the Son of David, in defiance of their rulers. Unfortunately, as we know, it didn't last. The establishment was just too strong. They didn't have the military might to put such an insurrection down, as happens so often in many dictatorships today, but they were able to manipulate the crowd on the strength of their superior religious knowledge and authority. The high priest said in one of the other Gospels, "This rabble knows nothing about the law. They are damned." And even when of their own number, Nicodemus suggested that the law does not allow judgment to be passed on a man without giving him a hearing, they turned on him. They said, "Are you a Galilean too then? Prophets do not come from Galilee." So they'd already made their minds up. It was decided then that, rather like what happens in Russia today, that any hint of opposition must be crushed. So while all their plotting was taking place during the week, what do you think was going on in Jesus' mind, knowing full well how painfully this was all going to end? And for an answer to that, we need to look at the Song of the Suffering Servant in the first reading, which highlights the constancy of his hope in God. And it's so strong that he's prepared to go through anything, trusting that in the end, all will be well. "I offered my back to those who struck me, my cheeks to those who tore at my beard. I did not cover my face against insult and spittle, but the Lord comes to my help so that I am untouched by the insults." When I was taking the children round the Stations of the Cross on Thursday, I explained to them how narrow the streets of the Via Crucis are. Those of you who have been there will remember that. Which meant that as Jesus stumbled along through the crowd, he was in easy range of those who did want to spit at him, or slap him, or punch him. So he would definitely have had to set his face like flint so as not to give them the satisfaction of seeing him react or retaliate, which of course is an unusual response, but very much in keeping with his teaching to love our enemies. I think perhaps seeing from so close a vantage point how Jesus dealt with such hatred may be the reason why Simon of Cyrene and his two sons later became disciples of Jesus. So although to the Jews Jesus was a blasphemer and a lawbreaker, in St. Paul's letter to the Philippians, we get a reminder of just who it is that we're talking about here. When we realize that, we may wonder, why didn't he simply manifest his power there and then to avoid the fate of the suffering servant? But what's clear in Paul's hymn is that Jesus is not some sort of fantasy superhero. Yes, his state was divine, but he did not cling to his equality with God in order to impress or cajole or scare people into loving him. He had no desire to be a Northern Korea-style beloved leader, lording it over his people, forcing them to submit to his will on pain of death. Instead, he assumed the condition of a slave, a state in life very unlikely to lead him to having a mass following. At the presentation in the temple, as you probably remember, Simeon had foretold that Jesus would be a sign of contradiction. And in assuming the condition of a slave, he certainly was. He turned the whole human way of interaction upside down. So serving instead of being served, seeking the common good instead of seeking our own glory. And we live in a world of excessive consumerism, where, as the Bible puts it, people have exchanged the glory of the living God for a bull, the image of a bull that eats grass. That, of course, was a reference to the idolatry of the Israelites when they built and worshipped a golden calf. So, but being a humble servant, Jesus does not try to impose himself on us as a popularist, but he seeks out those who have eyes to see and ears to listen, thinking people who don't mindlessly follow the crowd like lemmings over a cliff. His appeal then is for each of us to see the false gods and idols of today's society for what they really are, and to see him with the eyes of someone who understands that they are being invited personally to know him in person, to be cherished and loved by him, who says to all of us, "Do not be afraid. I have called you by your name. You are mine."